We are honored to have one of the world's top experts on eco-migration with us on Radio EcoShock. Dr. Norman Myers is currently a professor at Green College, Oxford, and a visiting professor at many other prestigious universities. He has advised world leaders, published 19 books, and is known for pioneering research into new problems. He is one of only two persons worldwide to receive all three leading environmental prizes from UNEP, plus the Volvo Environment and Blue Planet prizes. Dr. Myers, welcome.
Thank you. Very glad to be with you.
Can we start with a short explanation of what eco-migration is?
Yes, it's a term that has come into fairly widespread use in the last few years. After I defined eco-migration in 1993 as referring to those people who, here we go, find themselves obliged to leave their long-time residence area for reasons largely environmental, but also including additional factors such as poverty, population pressures, and so on. These people leave their usual habitats because they feel compelled to do so. They do not move at all out of choice. So they are quite unlike the economic opportunists who number maybe 200 million, whereas the environmental refugees, environmental migrants, as I call them, total only, well, less than 50 million. Does that respond to your question?
It does indeed. And I want to ask you, is climate disruption becoming a bigger driver of eco-migration versus simple pollution, say, or things like overgrazing?
Oh, yes, yes. Overgrazing, desertification, deforestation, water shortages, things of that sort, have been quite a significant problem. You see, if there are 50 million of these people, that's, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's twice as many people as you have in the whole of Canada. So it's a pretty big phenomenon, and that in itself is growing quite rapidly. But climate refugees, a kind of subset of environmental refugees, will, according to some calculations I did half a dozen years ago, leave us with the prospect of maybe about 220 million people could, and according to the IPCC, could surge to as many as half a billion people by 2050 or so. This is a much, much larger environmental problem than we've seen so far. But don't let's be altogether downside. This is not only a problem, but it is also a massive opportunity. We still have time, though only just enough time, to do a great deal to reduce the unprecedented damage that climate change will otherwise cause.
Where are the biggest eco-migrations happening so far?
Within the compass of sub-Saharan Africa, there's a lot there, and a lot have been threatened or overtaken by storm surges in coastal zones, hurricanes. And that applies especially in the Bay of Bengal, the Nile Delta, the eastern coastal areas of both China and India. Also quite a lot in, you see, there's quite a big migration from Mexico into the United States. And some of these people, only some, but a significant proportion of these people, are driven by environmental factors as opposed to economic opportunity.
Well, surely big think tanks and the world military are looking closely at eco-migration as one of the great problems of the century. Is this a growing field of research, and what tools can we apply to find out more?
It is a growing field, so thank goodness at last, at long last. I mentioned earlier that my original report was dated 1993, and for the first 10 years, the amount of action that we saw from governments and international agencies was, and I choose my word carefully, virtually nil. For various reasons of institutional inertia, political inclination to look the other way, a good deal of ignorance, if not ignorance, on the part of big business.
Well, the question is, what tools can we use to find out more about this now that we've identified it?
I think the main response to try to counter this massive phenomenon of environmental refugees is to address the causes of the migration. Hitherto, we've tended to address the symptoms of the problem. And we should go to the sources of the problem and ask ourselves, why do these people feel so driven to migrate in the first place? And what can we do to relieve that compulsive pressure? And that means that we must phase out the motivation that these people have to migrate. And in turn, that means pursuing what is known in the trade as sustainable development. We must enable these people to enjoy lifestyles that are acceptable, sustainable, and that means looking at water supplies, in particular in various parts of the world, tackling soil erosion, grand-scale pollution of various sorts, problems of that sort. Now, we know what to do. We have enough science and technological research. We know what to do, and we have the technologies to do the necessary. And we've found by experience that it will not cost the Earth to save the Earth. On the contrary, it will often put money into our pockets. But what we need, the resource in shorter supply right now, is not money or scientific understanding. It is political leadership, of which there is a woeful dearth.
Well, what should we be doing? I mean, for example, I've heard some people say in Britain, perhaps Britain should be setting up a stronger hospital system and prepare for more schools, because people will be coming from North Africa and various places where the deserts are expanding or drying out, and Britain and Scandinavia may have to pick up some of the load.
We should certainly be doing that on purely humanitarian grounds, but in terms of trying to get on top of this problem before it gets on top of us, that those measures you've mentioned won't go very far at all. This is not, repeat, not to decry those efforts, but in terms of reducing the overall problem, they won't go very far at all. We're already sorely late. If we got on with the job 10 or 15 years ago, we could have done a lot to relieve the plight of these migrants, but as it is, we've got a heck of a task on now because there's so much climate change in the pipeline.
I'd like to pick your mind for a second about China. I've been told that there are about 400 million people in the north of China experiencing a severe drought, while in the south, extreme storms have damaged some of the crops. I'm wondering, could we picture a world in which the Chinese move north into Siberia if the climate does shift, if we can't get things under control?
Wow, that's a real big one, because I don't suppose the Russians would stand by idly and watch millions of Chinese cross the border. That's why this issue is being addressed by military agencies, security agencies. But you're quite right. The northern half of China, where one third of the grain crop of the wheat crop is grown, is very short of water, and it's getting a lot shorter. In the southern half of China, there's in some places a surplus of water, and that's why the Chinese are investing huge amounts of money to build great pipelines from the Yangtze River into the northern sector. But again, that is tackling symptoms of the problem and not getting at the source of the problem. We should ask, well, why has this problem arisen in the first place? Why wasn't it tackled earlier? What are the political roadblocks that have prevented action thus far? The questions you're raising are very excellent questions, in my view, and I'm wondering if I'm giving answers that are sufficiently substantive and pointed and on target.
Oh, I think so. You're one of the preeminent experts in this field. You know, I'm thinking, too, about people in Australia are more aware of this problem because of the South Sea Islanders are already planning their move as rising seas will displace some of their countries. But here in North America, we really don't hear about eco-refugees. It's just not a topic of discussion. And I'm wondering, why should North Americans tune into this problem?
Well, I think they should stick around and stay tuned, frankly. The agricultural basis of North America's security, stability, prosperity, and so on is under quite severe threat in a globally warmed world. There'll be lots and lots of people flooding into the United States from Mexico and the Caribbean and other parts of Latin America. And to think that this tidal wave of migrants can be held back by building a big fence along the southern border of the United States, it helps, but that's all. And what has been a trickle has become somewhat of a stream. The stream will become a flood, and the flood will, according to the IPCC, and that is within a decade or so, become a torrent.
Yes, I can remember back in grade school learning Latin, and one of the things that we learned was about how the Roman guards were absolutely unable to stop the German masses, hundreds of thousands of people coming with all their possessions, just coming through every forest and stream there was. You really can't build a fence against that sort of event.
No, you certainly can't, just as you can't launch fighter planes against advancing desert. Let me just mention very briefly, if I can compress the point, that the way you said about Chinese flooding into Russia. There was a day when Russia and China went to war, and after the first day, the Russians had taken 1 million prisoners and said, do you want to give up? The Chinese said no. By the third day, the Russians had taken 5 million prisoners and said to the Chinese, do you want to give up? And the Chinese said, no. Do you want to give up?
Oh, dear. Well, as we wrap up, are there any parting points that you'd like to make, or perhaps even a website or an institution that listeners who want to follow up more could go to?
Well, the IPCC, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, has a great deal of detail on the mechanisms of climate change, what is causing it, how far it's gone already, how far is momentum already built into the system that we must look at. But above all, we must do much, much more to acknowledge that this is a major problem, quite unprecedented since we came out of our caves, unprecedented in scale and size and character. It's going to be one of the biggest shocks, or rather, let's be a bit positive and say one of the biggest challenges that humankind has ever had to tackle in the past. And it may finally help us to acknowledge that we do really live on a single planet, and we must try to make room for all inhabitants, no matter where they might be or where they've come from.
Dr. Norman Myers, thank you so much for your time. Currently a professor at Oxford, that was one of the world's top experts on environmental problems and possibly the founder of the study of eco-migration. What a gift that scientists are so generous with their time.